Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So you more than likely at some point, maybe still, have a collection of music that is literal. You have maybe some albums. Maybe you've got some CDs. Maybe somebody still has an occasional cassette. But that's not the way music is currently consumed. It's usually done by, you know, some sort of streaming service. So what's going to happen when streaming services either go out of business or fail? We've got somebody who can actually address that. Dr. Jonathan Stern is a professor and James McGill Chair in Culture and Technology at McGill University. Good evening. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I've been thinking about this all day since I knew that we were going to be doing a section on it, and I've been reading an article that was entitled, What Will Happen to My Music Library When Spotify Dies? Which is just one of the many sources of music for people today. What's your impression of all of that?
Well, you know, I loved when the reporter called me up, I loved the question of, you know, what's going to happen when Spotify goes away. He'd already lost his record collection once, or his collection of MP3s he'd curated on his hard drive because the hard drive died and he couldn't recover the music. And so he began wondering, you know, he's been on Spotify for years now, has tons of playlists. They've been tracking him and feeding him music they think he'll like. But he says, well, you know, will I be able to listen to this in 10 years or 20 years? And I said, the odds are very low that you will be able to listen to it through Spotify. You know, if you're talking about buying a record or a CD or something like that, the model is you own it as long as you have the technology to play it back. You can listen to it with Spotify. You're paying rent monthly to listen to the music.
Exactly. And there are, now, I personally don't use Spotify, but I do use, I've used iTunes in the past. I've used Amazon Music. Even, you know, you can get music off of YouTube if you want. There's all sorts of different sources. But that doesn't mean that you keep them or own them, so to speak. Unless, of course, you're downloading into your computer or, as you said, a hard drive, which you would need to maintain the same way you'd probably need to maintain vinyl when you had it or CDs when you had it. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't say the same way. I mean, hard drives fail. Even SSDs fail. So that's solid-state drives. And so you probably, you know, I always say data don't exist if you don't back them up into other places.
Right.
So you'd probably, you really need two hard drives, maybe one at home, one at work, and or like one at your friend's house and maybe somewhere in the cloud if you really, really want to have it well backed up. Now, in terms of downloading the music, Spotify does allow you to download tracks and listen offline, but if you end your subscription, those files, I believe, disappear from your hard drive after
a certain
amount of time.
Wow.
They have an expiration date. And I don't know exactly how that works. I haven't researched that. But again, it's, you know, paying rent for music versus buying music. I've used Spotify. I used Apple Music. I listen to stuff on YouTube like lots of other people do.
Right,
I listen to stuff
right.
on SoundCloud. But the place I like to pay for music is Bandcamp.
Oh, yes.
Because it is a more traditional relationship where you pay for the music, and then you technically own it and can do what you want with it, and you can share it with friends. And that's more like what I grew up with vinyl and cassettes.
Right. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of this hour, there was some sort of ridiculous controversy over the opening lyrics of Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen. And it was a last-minute thing that we were going to do, and I thought, well, let's listen to the beginning of Thunder Road. So I just went on YouTube and put in Thunder Road, and there it is. You know, mm-hmm. I played the intro, and I closed YouTube, and it's all done. I mean, there is that aspect of it being immediately accessible with, and in that case, I'm guessing I didn't pay any extra to anybody to hear Bruce Springsteen on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, it's more complicated than that. YouTube's an advertiser-supported medium,
uh-huh.
so you either had to sit through an ad or click through an ad,
right,
probably.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, I mean, in that way, the business model is a little more like radio,
right.
Except that they also collect all this data on you,
right.
Which they can then use themselves or sell to third parties. You know, of course, radio, you know, in the olden days, radio stations would have loved to have that kind of data on their listeners, but it wasn't possible.
Absolutely.
It just wasn't possible.
You know, it's the modern version of the focus group. That's what research departments at radio stations used to do, is get a cross-section of people in a room and play them snippets of songs and see what their reaction was. Now it's just some sort of computer program that analyzes what you're listening to and feeds you more of it. Is that the future?
Yeah, I mean, there are arguments. I mean, there are arguments for all these different ways of doing it. From my perspective, the issues are I'm a nerd. I'm a big believer in music. I'm a mm-hmm. musician as well. My question is always, like, what's best for musicians and
yes.
for people who love music,
right.
not what's best for venture capitalists or what's best for the company,
right.
but what's best for the promotion of a diverse musical culture. And so, you know, I think the more freedom audiences and fans have, great. Like, going on YouTube and listening to Bruce Springsteen for free, great. I do that. You know, my students will be talking about something I haven't heard, and I'll say, let's go listen to it.
Right, right.
And that's great. You know, but at the same time, I also want to live in a world where musicians have a chance of, like, having their music supported, and where audiences, you know, can access the music that they want and love without trouble. And, yeah, Bruce Springsteen is easy, but if you like more esoteric stuff, if you listen to local music, if you listen to certain kinds of independent music,
right.
stuff that's maybe not as popular, and actually even some popular music, like if you go on torrenting sites, even though, like, country, you know, pop country, like the stuff coming out of Nashville, hugely popular in the United States, very underrepresented in file sharing, just culturally because of who's, you know, doing file sharing. So even there, you got to say, if you love that music and you want to be able to listen to it in 10 or 20 years, you really have to think about how you'll be able to do that.
You know, the one thing we haven't mentioned yet, well, we're going to take a break and talk some more about it, but the one thing we haven't mentioned yet is you can go, hey, Alexa, play The Temptations, and just sit there and... we've got one in the other room. Can you hear it?
Yeah, well done.
Hold on a second. Hold it. That's not The Temptations. Alexa! Off! Turn it off, Alexa! Now it's out of control. See, the machine.
It's amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, that is artificial intelligence.
It's out of control! Stop! Well, I'm going to take a break and go in there and smash that thing. We'll be right back on 720 WGN. We've stumbled upon something that I think is going to be very entertaining. I'm talking to Dr. Jonathan Stern, who's a professor, and James McGill Chair in Culture and Technology at McGill University. And we're talking about what happens, you know, how do you keep the music that is intangible, so to speak? I mean, it's in the air. It's in a cloud, wherever the hell that is. It's in a stream of something that comes through something, and you hear it without any knowledge on the part of the listener as to how it works. So I moved the you-know-what into this room.
Okay. You didn't smash it. I was hoping, you know, the headline would be Man Named Records Smashes Alexa Film at 11, but I guess I don't get that.
Alexa, play Beethoven.
Here's some music by Ludwig van Beethoven on Amazon Music.
All right. Ah. Alexa, stop. That's all. Demonstration's over, everyone. Go back to your normal routine. But, I mean, that's what we're talking about. Really,
yeah.
Aren't we? Yeah. I mean, in a nutshell, that's the whole story. Here you have the artificial intelligence of this device that Amazon has put out and links to their massive collection of songs, and it is verbally controlled. No wonder people are going to outer space. I mean, it's just like it is really sort of out of our normal world to access music this way, don't you think?
Well, I think I think in a lot of ways it's great to be able to have that level of access and that level of freedom.
Right.
I mean, you can ask Alexa for Ludwig van Beethoven, but there'll be more obscure things that maybe Alexa won't have.
Right.
Or maybe something still in copyright. I mean, I don't keep track of this, but I'm sure Amazon's in a fight with some or another music publisher that doesn't have the music available on there. So it's great for stuff that's more well-known, more popular.
Yeah, yeah.
But even there, you know, I've had things disappear from my Apple Music collection because of the deal with the label. Like, there was a point at which some subsidiary of Sub Pop, their deal with Apple expired, and all of a sudden several records I owned weren't there anymore. And so, I mean, I still have the CD, so I just, you know, had to actually walk over, grab the CD, and rip the CD. So we're not talking.
Right.
This is definitely a first world problem.
Yes, indeed.
On the scale of things. But, you know, if the issue is instant access to readily, like, well-known music, we're there. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speech recognition is surprisingly good if you have a fairly standard accent in the language that you're speaking, and it's
right.
a language spoken by a lot of people. So that's great, and that's wonderful for users, but it also comes at a cost, right? You're paying a monthly fee to Amazon for that, which you have to pay in perpetuity, or you lose access through those means.
Right.
Moreover, you are also giving your listening data and your listening habits to Amazon. Now, granted, like in terms of things I'd be worried about being surveilled in my life, my music listening isn't really high on the list of things I'd be concerned about in terms of my privacy.
Right.
But it's part of a broader and pervasive culture of people willingly giving their data, which is basically either their own or you could think about it as a public resource, and it being collected in these private, what are called data lakes, which is sort of, you know, it's like the gold rush or oil prospecting or something like that. So Google and Amazon and Microsoft and other companies collect these huge, huge troves of data on the assumption that some of it will be useful in the future, but not knowing what or how or why.
I'm reading an article in which you're quoted as saying, if you look at the history of recorded music, the format switches every 25 to 50 years.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit it's interesting online. It switches a little bit faster, right? So you think about how long did MySpace last?
And
MySpace is a great example of this problem because all of these independent musicians had MySpace accounts because that's what you did at the time.
Mm.
And now all that music's gone.
Well, you know,
you can't access it unless the bands have, like, put it up somewhere else.
We have a call. Let's see if we can go to Gordon. You're on the air. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to mention that I go back with you for like 50 years or something. Aside from that, when you mention Alexa on the air, you activate 1,000 devices. Mine got up and started dancing. So just thought I'd mention that to you. You have a lot of power when you mention that on air.
Did it really? It triggered your device?
Of course.
Alexa, stop.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, I have the radio turned down, but occasionally the television will activate it. But I would be willing to bet that there are at least hundreds of devices across now jumping up and down. Just thought I'd comment on it.
That's awesome. Thanks, Gordon. I appreciate the call. You know, I think back on the ways that I access music. You know, there was vinyl, then there was... oh, gosh, what was that called? Come on. What is it? 8-tracks. Oh, my gosh. 8-tracks. Then there was CDs. Then MP3s. DAT tape. And now internet. I mean, if it changes that often, where would we go from here?
Well, I'm not a futurist.
Right.
But I can tell you that it will change. The one thing that's nice is that the patents on MP3 have expired. It used to be if you built a device to play back MP3s, you had to pay royalties. You no longer do. And so I think that that format might stick around a little bit longer, and that's a good thing. That said, I mean, even like, you know, NTSC, which is a standard for setting color on analog television sets,
yeah,
that standard just disappeared. I think NTSC then is the longest running media standard we have in the 20th or 21st century. So 1941 to, it depends on how you count, but let's say 1941 to 2021, it's a pretty good run. So, you know, if you're an archivist, you keep multiple playback devices. You go to the Library of Congress, they got cylinder players, they got tape players, they can play 8-tracks. They have weird, like, they're not CD-ROMs, but they're like optical discs before CDs. They have everything there, right? And they preserve the machinery as well as the playback devices. This is also, and it's not unique to recorded sound, people who preserve video games, you have to preserve the platform as well, right? If you can play emulations of old games, but it's not the same thing as plugging an old Atari or ColecoVision into a TV. And so archivists and libraries that preserve games now do the same thing. So for an individual, you know, the way to keep anything going is to, like, take care of your stuff, right? So if you want to keep playing your old records, well, you know, clean them and make sure your, you know, needle isn't 100 years old on your record player, unless it's a Victrola, in which case,
right,
you know, well, even then, you actually, they go through needles really fast. So
they sure do.
You can get those on Amazon, too, not just music.
They've got you coming and going.
Yeah. You know, take care of your old stuff, maintain your record player, your tape deck, if you want to listen to that, listen to those formats. And it's the same thing with music on hard drives. And, you know, as far as Spotify goes, if you're worried about it, you can buy the music through some other means. You can download the music and copy it in one way or another. You can,
right.
There's probably a way to break whatever copy protection they have on it. There's software that can record the output of your computer. The Atlantic article said, well, that's very cumbersome. And I just think back to making mixtapes, or even before that, like recording stuff off the radio.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to catch the right version where present company accepted, of course, the DJ was talking over the beginning of the song.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm sorry.
It was a whole challenge.
You know, we're going to have to pick this.
So,
Jonathan, we're going to have to pick this.
Partly we're so acclimated to convenience.
We're going to have to pick this up again somewhere because I'm running out of time. I thank you for being with us. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.